For Radio Autonomia, this is DJ Plebe with our September update on education struggles around the world. Today we're going to focus on three sites of struggle: Quebec, Chile, and here in the Bay Area. In Quebec, August 22nd marked another day of mass action, where tens of thousands of protesters marched in Montreal against the continued threat of an 82% tuition hike imposed by the Liberal government in power. The tradition of mass demonstrations on the 22nd of each month began last March, but really exploded in May when as many as 400,000 demonstrators came out on what was not only the 100th day of the student strike, but also the immediate aftermath of the passage of a new authoritarian law, Bill 78, which is now called Law 12, which restricted the right to assemble and protest. It showed that the law had sparked outrage more than fear. But the education struggle in Quebec has reached a critical and difficult point. On one hand, students recently voted at all the universities and CEGEPs, which are general and vocational colleges, sort of like two-year colleges, about whether to continue the strike, which had been going on for 6 months, or return to classes. While most universities voted to renew the strike, even the most militant CEGEP decided not to. The vote took place in the shadow of threats from politicians and school administrators, who circulated emails warning students that they would fail automatically if they went back on strike. It's not entirely clear how this will affect students' ongoing militancy. When classes started up this past Monday, students defied Law 12's prohibition on blocking classes, and at several universities in Montreal used direct action to enforce the strike and generally prevent business as usual, even in the face of a heavy police presence on campus. What is clear is that there's another potentially diversionary force that has to do with another level of electoral democracy, this time an even more official and institutionalized level. The Liberal Party, to which the current premier Jean Charest belongs, has called for provincial elections, that is for the province of Quebec, to take place on September 4th, in a couple days. The main opposition party, the Parti Québécois, is trying to take advantage of the students' antagonism and divert it into the electoral campaign by calling for a tuition freeze. Notably, they've called for students to stay calm and not strike during the election so as to avoid scaring away swing voters. Some organizers fear a win by the PQ will mean the end of the strike, as well as the death of the truly radical demand of free education for all that animated the student uprising to begin with. In other words, the opposition party wants to substitute a tuition freeze for free education. Moving on to Chile, if the summer marked something of a lull in the cycle of struggle by students, teachers, and their supporters against the authoritarian state that's been going on for the last 15 months, this past month, it started to pop off again. The new wave of demos began on August 8th, and since then, there have been massive marches with tens and hundreds of thousands of people, the rapid spread of school occupations, and plenty of heavily armed riot police shooting tear gas and water cannons. But there are a couple of new and important developments that we wanted to point out. First, while up until now the universities seem to have taken the lead in the fight, the front line of struggle over the last few weeks has shifted to the high schools. It was high school students this time who sparked the latest wave of occupations. More than 25 schools were occupied across the country, at least 9 of them in Santiago alone. The police quickly moved in to evict the occupiers, using armored vehicles to smash through the school's blockaded gates, brutalizing students and making 139 arrests. Witnesses alleged that, in addition to the generalized brutality, the police sexually assaulted many of the female students. Nevertheless, several high schools were reoccupied the very next day, while the main university in Santiago, the Universidad de Chile, officially voted to occupy as well, while about 10 other universities went on strike, all in solidarity now with the high schoolers. In addition to adopting the demands of the university protesters, the high school students added another one: the government's failure to rebuild their schools that had been damaged during the major earthquake that hit Chile back in 2010. A second shift can be seen at the level of tactics on the streets. According to an analysis posted on the website Homodolars, which is HOMMODOLARS.org, titled La Toma y su Defensa Callejera, what has changed most visibly is the speed of the police response to the occupations. Last year, the police targeted street protests most intensely, using massive police deployments to control and intimidate, kettling marches and attacking demonstrators with water cannon tanks, tear gas, and batons in order to keep them away from strategic locations, like government buildings. Occupations, on the other hand, were treated with a somewhat lighter touch. The police often left them alone for months at a time. The idea was to criminalize one type of protest as inherently violent, especially since the marches tended to culminate in clashes with the police, while allowing the other type of protest, that is, occupation, to be seen as more legitimate and less violent. Now, especially as street protests have gotten somewhat smaller over the last few months, the police have begun to evict occupiers within days and to label the occupations themselves as violent too. As the article puts it, La toma es ahora la protesta callejera. Occupation has become street protest. Finally, in the Bay, the fight against the privatization of public education seems to be starting up again. There are a few things we'll be wanting to keep our eyes on as the school year begins. First of all, at the UCs, as in Quebec, the role of electoral politics in mediating militant or radical struggle is significant. Last spring, the UC Regents negotiated a deal with the state government by which the UCs would be spared a tuition hike for the fall semester. But, as you might have expected, it's not actually as good a deal as it initially sounds. The decision is conditional. It depends on the approval of a tax referendum pushed by Governor Jerry Brown that will be voted on in the November elections. What's worse is that the tax is regressive. It does include a tax on rich Californians, but Brown specifically paired it with a hike in the sales tax, which hits the poor the hardest. And it's temporary anyway, so it won't go very far in resolving any long-term funding issues for public education. If the referendum doesn't pass, which is very likely in anti-tax California, a series of trigger cuts will go into effect automatically, immediately cutting $250 million from the UC and another $250 million from the CSU system. The UC administration has even stated that, in this case, it would jack up tuition by over 20% midway through the year. A friend recently told me that the name trigger cuts is a perfect description of austerity at the barrel of a gun. As those of us who've been involved in the anti-privatization struggle at the UC have been saying since 2009, behind every tuition hike, there's a line of riot cops. Regardless, what's important to pay attention to here is the way electoral politics once again diverts energy from more militant struggle. The UC administration and the state are smart. They've created a machine-like scenario to actively force student organizers into the electoral system, drawing them into the fold of the Democratic Party and its neoliberal politics of austerity. There's a great article called Before the Fall on the Viewpoint magazine website, viewpointmag.com, that has some thoughts on how the anti-austerity struggle at UC Berkeley might try to avoid this electoral co-optation and take shape over the coming months. One of the strategies it suggests, and something worth looking into in its own right, are the huge changes on the horizon at City College of San Francisco. In June, the Accrediting Commission for Community and Junior Colleges, or ACCJC, released a report stating that CCSF would lose its accreditation if it doesn't come up with a plan to implement major structural reforms by October 15th. Since schools without accreditation can't receive state funds, this would essentially mean that CCSF would be forced to close by next summer. The problems identified by the report are varied, but most of them can be attributed overall to the devastating budget cuts that community colleges have increasingly faced over the last two decades. In fact, several issues are straight out of the corporate university playbook. For example, the report strikingly declares that CCSF has too few administrators and that instruction takes up too much of the institution's budget. There weren't enough reserves, according to the accreditors, because the school had invested what little money it had in trying to avoid canceling classes and laying off faculty over the last couple years of financial crisis. For those of us who've experienced administrative bloat at the UCs, where last year the number of senior managers officially surpassed the number of faculty, this sounds like something that we've been pushing for, a university without bosses, where students and teachers are truly valued. It's no surprise, then, that the bodies in charge of regulating higher education, which has been effectively corporatized, sees problems there. Students and faculty have been organizing since the news broke, and we expect to start seeing actions as the school year begins. For Radio Autonomía, this has been an education update from DJ Plebe. Uh-huh.